Do you really need New York City or Los Angeles to make your creative dreams come true? That's what we're going to be talking about today on The Sick Picnic. I want to welcome you guys to The Sick Picnic. This is where we chat with working artists about the ups and downs of building creative careers, and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm your host and creative spirit guide, Matt Geiler. Although, if you're watching this, you might be looking at me thinking it's more of a Technicolor cartoon, countercultural lumberjack vibe he's got going on with that insane flannel shirt. I'm super excited for this episode. But before we dive in, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and sign up for the Sick Picnic newsletter. Each month in the newsletter, we send you some inspiration, recommendations, super fun stuff to jumpstart your creativity. And it's good. It's good. Tastes good. It's good for you. Now that we have that out of the way, let's get back to it. My guest is amazing. I can't wait to talk to her. Lonita Cook. She's worked as a creative producer, a leading film critic, a fierce arts advocate in Kansas City. When she's not writing, creating, or hosting a show, or supporting numerous arts nonprofits, you can find her traveling to film junkets around the world. She's been very involved with the Sundance Film Festival over several years. All that to say, you are amazing. I can't think of a better person to chat with about today's topic. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Sick Picnic, Lonita Cook.
Yay! Oh, Matt,
Yay!
what an introduction. Thank you so much. And I am so very happy to be here. And I gotta say, I've already signed up for that newsletter. I can say I love how you guide us and you share tidbits of your journey with us and make us feel seen and like we're not alone. So I also encourage everybody sign up for that newsletter.
Oh, that's so kind of you. I'm super excited to talk with you. This gives us a chance to go back down amnesia lane and kind of reminisce a little bit about how we met in the first place, which was in New York City. If you don't mind, can we go back? Can we rewind the clock a little bit to to the American Musical Dramatic Academy, Manhattan, New York City, 1997? That's where you and I met.
Yes, it is where we met. So I was born and raised in Kansas City, Kansas, and the elementary school I went to had cows on the playground. So it was very rural. And so coming from Kansas to live in Manhattan, in New York City, it was such a culture shock. And so
Sure.
having you there from Omaha, which was a very similar kind of culture, seeing you be able to thrive gave me hope that a little old girl from Kansas could make it in the Big Apple, right?
From my side too, it was cool to meet another Midwesterner. And I had never been to, the first time I was in New York City was the day I moved there. I had never been before for like a visitor trip or anything.
It is incredibly overwhelming. When I was coming up, I thought I was a big city girl trapped in a small town. And once I got in New York, I realized I'm a small town girl. Hold on, And but one thing I will say is one time I asked you a question, and I won't repeat the question, I won't repeat your answer. But it was that moment for me that that changed my life because I said, I want to be like that too. And it set me on a trajectory of wanting to do more and be better. And that is what I think you can do from anywhere.
That makes me want to actually start a cult right now. That kind of flowery, effusive language and praise and mindless devotion makes me want to run out and actually start a cult. In Kansas City, you've created in my opinion, a really impressive creative career and community there, which I have a ton of questions about. You come back from New York to Kansas City in the land of barbecue and baseball, I guess, if you consider the Royals a baseball team. How did you initially find and connect with kindred creative souls?
Well, So all of it is spurred on by the desire for self-discovery. When I was in New York, I realized that I did not want to be an actor. I didn't want to be cutthroat. I didn't want to compete. And I didn't want to give pieces of myself away for something that was only fun to me. And so I had to, and there is also this thing that's broader about me where I feel like I've come into this world halfway. And so I needed to find myself. And so I said, I know that I'm an artist. I know that I like to act. I know that I like theater artists. I love actors. What can I do? And so in my exploration, I'm trying new things. I'm trying everything. I did an internship at a talent agency. I wrote a stage play. And I knew early on that I wanted to be effective in job creation. And so I wanted to be able to create jobs for my fellow actors and particularly Black actors. And so I am wanting to do that while simultaneously find where I fit, genuinely fit. And so that is kind of how I made the connections and the relationships. But I always did it not just in service to myself, but how can I learn who I am by serving you?
You know, it's relatively rare, I think, that, you know, for you to stop and say, all right, well, how can I be inclusive? How can I build something that makes opportunities for other people, as opposed to I'm just trying to find every opportunity I can. That's kudos to you for having that approach at such an early stage in your career.
Well, I mean, that's just something that was innate. I didn't do that. That was something that was put in me when I got here. My mother was a very generous person. And so some of it is nature, some of it is nurture. But then also my first job ever in my life is a little tyke was at my grandfather's feet. And what my grandfather did, he was a carpenter. And so this idea of building and structuring something was taught to me very young. And so I want to be effective in building. But if you build for yourself, I think that is the most feeble of structures.
Mm. And honestly, I mean, that explains why everything I've tried to orchestrate at one time or another has crashed into a ball of green flame, because it's all about the ABCs of me. So I mean, thank you for, you know, coming on here and giving people a more generous perspective.
It is a challenge, because when you give, like you said before, we are in a world of takers. Okay. And it is very challenging for me. I was not raised with the tools to effectively be in opposition to that. And I was raised in, I'm a square up with you if you cross me. And so it has been a very challenging journey where if I know that I'm a giver, I know that. And it took me a long time to understand that some people, not everybody, but some people take advantage of givers. Mm-hmm. And when you do that to me, I'm like, I'm finna whoop something. And so that's, it's been a difficult journey to learn how to do that in an eloquent way.
Mm. What do you feel are like some of those key moments along your journey that you look back and you would say, oh, that was a turning point that kind of contributed to me going down this path?
I wrote a stage play when I was a student at UMKC, and I had the student advisor read it. And he came back and he said, this is completely inappropriate for the stage. And I think I'm a theater person. The theater is my sanctuary. All of theater people are my folks, right? And so when he says it's completely inappropriate for the stage, but have you considered writing a novel? I was offended. And so it took me some years to process what he was trying to tell me. And so I went ahead and I said, let me write this story. I had something happen in my life, in the life of my family, and I needed to tell that story. And then in my way. And so I went ahead and I started writing this novel, and I let somebody read the first 15 pages and I let somebody else read the first 15 pages. And I realized I ain't no good. You know, I stink at writing. And so I joined a writer's group. But I will say the people that I had read those first 15 pages, they were like, have you ever read this? And so like one person gave me like some erotica, which I had never read. And I said, people printing this? Hold on. And then somebody else gave me an Ayn Rand book and introduced me. She gave me Fountainhead. And I read it, and it was this very, a style of writing that I never, because, and here's the thing, I love to read, but as an adult, I've read mostly nonfiction. And so I was writing fiction, but I didn't read fiction. And so now I'm being reintroduced. I'm getting into Dan Brown. And now I'm reading again, voraciously, like I did as a kid. And so I turned in my first 30 pages. And I have to tell you one note, it's a note that has stayed with me all these years. It's been over a decade since I wrote this book. And we're going around the table and they're all giving me these notes. Nobody likes what I've turned in. And she said, this was my favorite part because it was over. I said, what?
That sounds mean. That sounds like a mean lady.
It was awful to hear. I was like, I'm sorry, what? But because I had been an actor, I've been classically trained. I just wrote my notes down. I didn't take offense. I didn't get defensive. I said, you know, because now you're learning to take notes under advisement. You tell me what you need to say, because there's something in there that I can use. Whether you say it mean or not, is it useful to me? And so I stayed with that writer's group for 4 years, and I let them teach me how to write.
So that was a turning point, but that I imagine that also turned into a bit of a community of its own.
Yes. So one of my, I mean, all of them, Kent Babb, he is a famous journalist. He was in our writers group. I think he writes for the Washington Post now. He's published. He's a sports writer. He was in our writers group, and we keep in touch. But my girl, Naomi Shoup, I got to always say what's up to Naomi Shoup, because then I was a single mother. I had 3 children on my own. I didn't always have reliable transportation. This girl would come pick me up. She would not ask me for gas money. We met every other week for 4 years. She would make sure I made it. And this was a long time ago, and since, this girl has knitted me sweaters. She always celebrates my birthday. I just dropped a new show on Kansas City PBS, and she donated. I mean, this girl has had my back for years, and that connection came from us being in the trenches, creating together.
That's the kind of thing that you want to find or be able to create. If you're not in a place like New York or LA where there's an industry, I imagine that kept you going.
It definitely kept me going, because if she didn't give me no ride, I wasn't gonna make it.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Have you faced any misconceptions or like hurdles about pursuing a career in Kansas City? You know, LA, a lot of times people, because you're there and because you're in it and in the trenches, you think that's the center of the universe. And oh my God, how could you be anywhere else and make a movie or write a TV show or do anything that's kind of, you know, worth it outside of that hot center of the galaxy? And likewise, you know, in Omaha, I've run into people who are like, kind of the opposite end of that, like, oh, I have a great idea for a TV show, or I have a great idea for a novel or a movie or whatever, but I can't do it because I need to be in a real recording studio with a real producer, or I need to, you know, I need to sell my idea to a studio as opposed to finding a way to make it locally. So I think there are misconceptions and hurdles on both ends of that spectrum. And I just wondered, you know, if you've ever run into, encountered that kind of a thing, you know, in Kansas City.
Well, I will say, keeping with the writers group, one thing that I had a misconception about was how the industry was exactly the same. When we were coming up, the Big Six, it was Big Six publishers. I think there's only five now. And but everybody in my writers group and the other writers had already been traditionally published, and they all wanted to be self-published. And for me, I had this attitude that if you were self-published, it meant that you could not be traditionally published, but they were already traditionally published and they wanted to be self-published, and they had great arguments for why. And so this the shift in the industry began with the internet, with independent publishers taking on smaller projects, signing lesser known writers, making sure that there's a publishing budget to get, you know, their writers' work out there. Obviously, the advent of social media, taking that ability to market into your own hands. This is the key transformation. And so for me, I was the one with the misconception of how things were for so long, because I didn't realize that the world was changing. The advent of AI and how people are able to ideate and get their beat structure using these programs, it's just exploding what the individual is able to do on their own. The world has changed. And so I think people still have this reverence for New York, Chicago, LA, and possibly even Atlanta. But we understand that we can self-tape now, okay? And we can send things in. But if you're going to have those key meetings and the executive is in LA, you're going to have to get yourself there. But you can get started and operate from anywhere.
It's just a more nuanced, I think, multifaceted model, because A, technology allows for it. And B, I don't know if you ever had a moment like this. I have very few of these, by the way. I don't have many moments of clarity, as you can tell by the hair and the shirt. But every now and again, I get a moment of clarity where I figure it out for myself. And I had one of those moments kind of in a dark place shortly after I moved back to Omaha from New York. And I was feeling, I'd been feeling kind of low about, like, oh, I just unplugged from this place that I should be to make anything happen for myself in my career. And I'm not sure what prompted it, but I had the thought one day of, if I'm an artist, that doesn't change. I mean, I could be in the North Pole or something. I could be in some remote location with nobody around me, and I'm still who I am. I'm still an artist. So then it becomes the challenge of figuring out, okay, how do I make my art wherever I'm at? You know, I'm an artist regardless of whether I'm living in the Upper West Side or living in Hollywood. The challenge is just how do I do it? And it wasn't profound, but for me, it was like, oh, this need to make and express and create isn't dependent on a geographical location.
It really is understanding the community that you're in and what that community needs. And I'm speaking about the way that you function as an artist, the way that you practice in the community. It's who are they? Meet them where they're at, right? Mm-hmm. Be in the place where you are. If your heart is in New York City, then get on up there, right? But then understand that you are a creative. And so now you're thinking about what this community also needs. How can you be a benefit to this community? And so volunteering for Sundance Film Festival, I did that for 13 years. And it wasn't, I was doing it as a vacation, right? Because as a volunteer, you know, all I had to do was get myself there. They put us up. I had a great time. I got to meet all these sensational people, filmmakers, celebrities, distributors, like all these folks are just walking around Park City. It was maybe years three or four where I said, wait a minute. How can we do this back home in Kansas City? And so then I came home and I started researching, do we have film festivals in Kansas City? I knew nothing about film festivals. I was going to Sundance because I like movies. I wanted to see my friend. I mean, like my first year, somebody asked me how much the tickets were to the films. I was like, I think they're free. And they was looking at me like, right now? I knew nothing about film festivals. But what I learned there, because I worked in the transportation department, I learned about systems, right? Because that transportation touched every other system because everybody needed to use that transport to get, you know, from venue to venue, get to Main Street, right? And then I worked in one of the theaters. So understanding how we're screening films, how we're getting the patrons through. I worked in headquarters. Headquarters is where everything's at, okay? And now I'm learning about how to work with sponsors and donors. What's the difference between the two? How do you mine your property for its assets so that you can sell to sponsors? Like things like this, these are what I'm able to learn, not because I'm in that position, but because I have access to the people who are in those positions and they're willing to sit down and answer those questions. And people want, and here's the thing, people want to tell you what they know. They want to help. Right. And I would ask, so how does this work? So you mean there are internal sponsorships and external, like public facing sponsorships? Like, like there are so many things that I learned just from showing up and then saying, how can I duplicate that? Not duplicate it. How can I give Kansas City its version of that?
So knowing that, I think that's a great point that people want to share what they know. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, people aren't stingy with their information. They're looking for, you know, a way to pass it on. So if you're an artist trying to build your career outside of LA and or New York City or some hub like that, what advice would you give them along those lines?
So, I mean, I don't have any fancy advice. I hope I don't disappoint you. The thing that I always say, one, the traditional thing that we all know, find a mentor and do the work that it takes to find a mentor that's right for you. Because a lot of people ask me for mentorship and I'm like, are you sure I'm the one? You know what I mean? Like you want to get a mentor that is a good fit for you. This is a real relationship. And like any other relationship, you want to be compatible, right? And then my second piece of advice, in the beginning, walk through the open doors, the ones that do no harm and the ones that do help, right? And I would even add, after doing this for so long, walk through the open doors that help to heal.
That actually might have healed me. Just what you said, it might have healed me. I can certainly feel my legs now again. I'll tell you that much. You know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, some secrets to how you built your vibrant creative career down in good old KC. And so I want to spread the picnic blanket out a little bit and dive into the nitty-gritty of your creative process. Let's get into how that works. And I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you about, Lonita, is could you share like a specific moment or maybe a ritual that consistently sparks inspiration when you sit down to write?
That's a good question. The only time that I've ever experienced writer's block is after my mother passed away. So otherwise, I've not ever really experienced writer's block. And I consider myself a storyteller. And I approach story as a, I believe, a constructionist. And I think it goes back, like I said, to that first job at my grandfather's feet, right? And so I think about theme and premise. I'm a talker. So I think I always got something to say. And I think your theme is the wisdom of the storyteller that is stated. And then your premise is the wisdom of the storyteller that is demonstrated. And so I am always mining how I see the world and what do I have to impart that I think could be beneficial to a viewer or a reader. And then could it also be dramatic or cinematic or you right? And that's really my entry point. I don't necessarily have a ritual except responding rather than reacting, responding to the world. That's what my art allows me to do. There is a thing that I've experienced on this journey where I believe that people discount me no matter what I've done, no matter what I've accomplished, no matter where I've been, no matter what I got going on, no matter where I've studied, anything like that. They always discount me because I'm black and because I'm a woman. And I'm always very cautious about quote unquote pulling the race card, but everybody has to understand that it happens to us frequently. And I call it the
Sure.
childification of blackness. Right, where no matter what I do, no matter how old I am, no matter right, and by I mean I believe this happens to a lot of people, but definitely
Yeah.
black people. And so I have a rich body of experiences to respond to. Now, when I was younger, I used to react. I know you didn't, right? But now it's how do I respond to the world without making and letting my art take that feeling, take what I think about the world, and then but only partially be responsive, right? Because I think a problem when we are women, I think a problem when we are not white, and we are in creative spaces, our work is too much in respond to what we call the patriarchy. Right. And I think it's, I believe it's a hindrance. Okay.
Sure.
And so I like to say I'm responding by how this shapes my worldview, but being very cognizant that this is my worldview and it's in response to the experiences I have. And some of them are racist experiences. When I create, I want it to be for art's sake. I don't want it to be for the sake of anything else. And so that's a part of my ritual is just saying, what do I have to say? How do I want to say it? And be as responsible as I can be when I'm saying it.
Do you have particular resources that you favor that you feel like these are the resources I can't live without?
Definitely, notebooks and pen. I'm old school.
Yes, Lonita.
I have notebooks all over the place in my car, in my office, kitchen. I mean, but they're not up on shelves like yours.
Sick.
And so that's one thing. Obviously, I mean, my laptop, other folks, people that I can go to, and then constantly learning. One thing that I do is I take classes through MIT OpenCourseWare all the time. That is a resource that I lean on to say, okay, ooh, how much more can I learn about finance? Because these are the things about being a creative producer, being a creative who wants to make a living at my craft. These are the kinds of things that we have to know. What we do as critics is a craft in and of itself.
Sure.
And particularly if we contribute to print, we are writers and we have to know how to shape a narrative. I went through the professional producers program at UCLA, and I am
Right.
so proud proud of being a film critic. I'm always like, I'm a film critic, you know? And this was where I came to understand that filmmakers are like, oh, for real, you're a film critic, you know? And I took some writing classes through Second City, Chicago. And it was kind of the same thing where I'm introducing myself as a film critic. I think being able to express to the filmmaker that I'm a fellow artist, I started out as an actor, I'm classically trained, and I care about what you do. I revere you as an artisan. I revere crew folk as technicians, but somebody has to hold you because it is a consumer-driven medium. Somebody has to hold you to task, and I'm willing to do that. And so I see myself as a liaison between the artist and the audience, protecting both. Right. And no, not all film critics feel that same way, but that's why there's room for all of us, you know?
Well, that's that abundance that you were talking about, you know, the idea that there's room for everybody and many voices, as opposed to there's only a limited amount. You look back at younger Lonita Cook, younger Issa Lowe, younger Leonidas Cook. What's the advice that you would give to younger Lonita?
Don't be so ashamed that I'm a mess. I mean, that's real talk, because I hindered myself in a lot of ways. But one of the key ways that I hindered myself was always being so nervous when I entered a room, because I never felt good enough because of the kinds of things that I experienced growing up, these messages that I received that I'm not lovable, that I'm not cared about. And when I would walk in a room, I would carry that with me, even in professional settings, like not just interpersonally and, you know, and dating and all those things, but in job interviews, you know, I would just remind myself that your mess is okay. Everybody got a mess that they carry in around, everybody. And nobody's is worse than the other. And so I would be very clear with Lonita that you're gonna get through it, you're gonna work on it, your intent is it to be good, the way that you operate is to refine yourself for goodness, and that's enough.
I love it. You know what now it's time for, Lonita? This is snack time. This is where we talk about creative projects, cool artistic endeavors you've got going on right now. What are you working on right now? I think I know how you're going to answer this question. What are you working on right now that has you excited?
Yes, you do know how I'm going to answer this question. So we just released the pilot episode of our midlife coming of age open road travel show for Kansas City PBS. However, anybody in the country can watch it on your PBS passport. And it is me and my co-host, Michael Mackey, who is a veteran TV personality in Iowa and in Kansas City, who is well known across the nation. He's also a travel writer, and me, an arts advocate and film critic, and I'm a little bit more conservative, more sobering personality. We get together and we travel throughout Kansas and Missouri right now, and just find ourselves by getting lost.
Get Lost is the program, and I've seen the pilot episode. It's fantastic. It's interesting that you say you're the more. I get why you say it, that you're the more conservative of the two personalities, but that's just a testament to how fun a show it is, because both of you are teeming with personality, literally drenching the screen with effusive interpersonal goodness.
The premise of the show is that we throw a dart at a map and we head that way to whatever town, wherever that dart hits, and we make stops along the way. And those stops are defined by our need to explore.
Lonita Cook, hosting a show made in Kansas City. Where can people go to find it, check it out, and see you do your thing?
You can download that PBS Passport app, and then you can just search for Get Lost. And it's me and Michael Mackey, and watch the pilot. If you don't have a way to view on television, you can watch the episode at KCPBS on YouTube.
Awesome. And here's final question of the savory snack section. What's the best way for people to connect with Lonita Cook?
Thank you so much for asking. At Lonita Cook on Instagram, I am going to start talking more about how to do the things that I do, how to get started in film criticism. I'm also an arts advocate, and I don't know if I said a lot about that during our chat today, but I'm the previous president, the first Black woman to be elected to president over the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Museum Foundation. I'm currently on the board of the Johnson County Park and Rec Foundation. I am on the advisory board of the Arts Council of Johnson County. I'm also on the Arts KC Advocacy Committee. And then I also serve arts-based nonprofits with the Kansas Department of Commerce Creative Arts Industries. And so one of the things that I'm going to talk about is how to rewrite your proposal for funding. Things that are very niche, like how to structure your board and stuff like that, we can talk about. But I want to start sharing the knowledge that I've picked up over the years. And so you can also find me at www.lonitacook.com and sign up for my newsletter. And I will talk about jet setting for junkets. I will talk about being a critic and going to award ceremonies. I'll talk about all the things. If you are a creative producer, how to write your log line, how to structure your pitch deck. We had to sell this show to PBS. There was an entire process of getting a green light. And so the research that we did, like I said, I take courses through MIT OpenCourseWare. Michael Mackey, my co-host of Get Lost, he had already pitched the idea to PBS, and they wanted him to find a co-host, someone with an arts background. And so he came to me, and I said, this is like serendipitous. This is great timing, because I had just finished a course called Becoming Bill Nye through MIT OpenCourseWare, which is all about the host as trusted guide, which is PBS branding. And so PBS also publishes their strategic plan. They also have a producer's handbook available online. And I went through all of those things and just went through all of that. What are they looking for? And they had also let us know that they're looking for a travel show to be reminiscent of a show that was popular in the 90s called Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations. I watched every episode of that show that I could find in order to write this pilot. And so I will be sharing information about how to do all of that through my newsletter.
That's awesome. Well, we want people to connect with you, certainly, because you have a wealth to share with all sorts of creative communities. But we got to hold up now. Now that we've peeled back the curtain on your amazing journey, Lonita, it's time to toss you into the slapdash hot seat with no overthinking, no second guessing. So Lonita, are you ready to jump into the slapdash hot seat?
Let me take one more sip of coffee. I feel like I'm going to need it.
Coffee up. Get that hotter upper, because the slapdash is about to go down. You ready for these questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. First question. What's your favorite type of music?
Pavarotti.
Is your bed made right now?
I sleep on a sofa.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Night owl. Interesting. What food can you not live without?
Veggies.
Veggies in general?
Minus beets. I can't stand beets.
I know what you mean. Offensive and disturbing at the same time. Literally shouldn't be included in the vegetable family. Winter, spring, summer, or fall?
Spring.
What posters did you have in your room as a kid? We want to know.
New Kids on a Block.
Ha ha! A little NKOTB. Salty or sweet?
I like combo.
You're gonna mix them both together? We'll let you do that on the sick picnic. One place you'd like to see before you die, Lonita.
Ghana.
Ghana. Unusual, but intriguing. And if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Okay, so now we getting, I done said all of this sweet stuff, and now we're gonna get into my villainry. Okay. What, so I would like the power to, with my mind, remove organs and body parts from bad doers.
Through mind power, you would remove organs and limbs from evildoers. You would just think, no leg, and it's gone. Or.
If they steal, I would like to surgically remove their hands with my mind. If they tell lies, I would like to surgically remove their tongue with my mind.
That's like in an ESP Hammurabi's code. It's like an eye for an eye, but all you have to do is like raise your eyebrow or like make a look, and then all of a sudden there's no tongue.
That's right. I want to twinkle my nose, bewitch this. I almost said the wrong word. Hold on.
Wow, Lonita, what a profoundly upsetting and weird end to our interview. Oh my God, you're awesome. One of my favorite people. Thank you so much for being with me today on the Sick Picnic and discussing the topic of, kind of getting into how can we have a productive, creative life and a fulfilling creative journey outside of the LA NYC scene. That's going to help fellow artists as they start to blaze their little trails out into the world. And that's an important thing too. So thank you for being here and being a part of it.
Thank you for having me, Matt. This has been such a blast. You know, nobody makes me laugh like you do. And I, again, I'm so proud of what you're doing, but this is important that you want to be in service to your fellow artists. And so, any way that I can help and help elevate, let me know.
Thank you so much. Good luck with Get Lost, and keep Kansas City locked down, as I know you do. As we wrap up today's episode of the Sick Picnic, we want to leave your creative belly full. So here it is, your sweet treat creative challenge. And that challenge is connect to creative community right where you are. And we want to hear how you're doing that and what your ideas on accomplishing that are. So be sure to post on the Sick Picnic Facebook page or socials using hashtag SickPicnic, sweet treat. We can't wait to see what you're up to. And thank you so much for tuning into the Sick Picnic. To us, you're both a listener and a part of our creative community. Please remember to hit that subscribe button and sign up for the newsletter at www.sickpicnicmedia.com. And hey, if you like this episode or you think it might be helpful to someone, please share on your socials, leave a little old 5-star review on that puppy. And until next time, remember to make your art, have some fun, and imagine anything. Peace and much love. We'll see you soon. Please note, the Sick Picnic podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal professional advice. The views expressed may not be those of the host or Sick Picnic Media. We are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. Copyright 2023 Sick Picnic Media. All rights reserved, including the right to reproduce, distribute, or transmit in any form or by any means.